Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in what seems like a short piece of text, but it's incredibly dense. Genesis chapter 17, verses 20 through 25.
It really is. It's packed with divine precision, some beautiful linguistic stuff, and this sense of radical human commitment.
Yeah, it feels pivotal. It's where God kind of balances his promise, or maybe his compassion for Ishmael, with this very specific covenant commitment to Isaac.
Yeah.
And it's all sealed with the command for circumcision.
Exactly. And it's more than just, you know, family history. It's almost a study in categories. We're looking at how the original Hebrew deliberately uses certain words, certain verbs, and these really precise timing phrases.
To distinguish what? Between blessing and something else.
Precisely. Between a general blessing, which Ishmael definitely receives, and this eternal established covenant, which is reserved for Isaac. If you're trying to understand, like, the interplay between promise and obedience, these few verses, they offer surprising clarity.
Okay. So our mission today is to sort of cut through the narrative layer and pull out those maybe hidden theological insights. Looking at the wordplay, which sounds fascinating, and this almost shocking level of obedience from Abraham.
Yeah, the speed of it.
Why did this moment need such immediate physical action? Okay, let's unpack this.
Right. So context first. This happens right after God has promised Abraham and Sarah that they will have a son, Isaac. But Abraham, you know, he's already a father to Ishmael.
And he cares about him.
Deeply. So he asks God, essentially, hey, can't Ishmael be the one? Let him live under your blessing, carry the promise. Verse 20 is God's reply. It's gentle, but very clear.
And it starts with such recognition, doesn't it? God says, as for Ishmael, I have heard you. That phrase alone.
Exactly. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and multiply him exceedingly. He shall father 12 princes and I will make him into a great nation.
Okay. That promise is huge.
Yeah.
But that first part, I have heard you. You mentioned wordplay.
Yes. This is where it gets really neat. Ishmael's name in Hebrew, Yehovah.
Which means?
Literally, God hears. And what does God say right back to Abraham? He uses the verb shamator.
Meaning?
I have heard you. It's like God is enacting the meaning of the boy's name in the very act of responding to Abraham's plea.
Wow. So it's not just listening. It's a validation. God is confirming, yes, I am the God who hears, and I have heard concerning this son named God hears.
Precisely. It's this beautiful assurance to Abraham that Ishmael isn't forgotten, isn't disregarded. But then look at the scope of the blessing.
It's massive. Oh. 12 princes, a great nation. That's not just a minor blessing.
Not at all. This is a promise of immense geopolitical significance, you could say. A destiny of grandeur for Ishmael's line.
And the language used, is it just sort of standard blessing language, or is there something deeper there?
Oh, it's deeper. That's a key point. The promise uses really foundational, almost primal verbs. God says, he will make Ishmael fruitful and multiply him exceedingly. Hefreti Urboti.
Hefreti Urboti. Where have we heard those roots before?
Genesis 1, Para and Rabbah. Be fruitful and multiply. It's the language of creation itself, and it's used in the covenants, like with Noah.
So even though Ishmael is explicitly outside the specific covenant line running through Isaac,
yes,
he still gets this incredibly powerful blessing using the same core language of divine favor and creation mandate.
Exactly. It shows that God's blessing isn't stingy. It overflows. Ishmael's future is guaranteed to be significant, prosperous, powerful.
Okay. So that reassures Abraham about Ishmael.
Yeah.
And then conversation kind of concludes.
It does. Verse 22 simply says, when he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham.
Way all in shame.
God went up. Like, the meeting is officially over, sealed.
The divine visitation concludes. The promises about Ishmael are made. And now comes the pivot, the crucial distinction.
Right, because verse 21 starts with a but.
A very strong but.
Mm-hmm.
God has just laid out this grand future for Ishmael, but he says, I will establish my covenant with Isaac.
Okay, establish, that sounds different from bless. What's the Hebrew word there and what does it really imply? The word is akim. Akim at beritie. It means, I will raise up, I will confirm, I will establish my covenant. It carries this weight of permanence, of setting up an institution, an enduring structure.
So blessing is one thing, maybe more like divine favor. Prosperity.
Yeah, potential future greatness.
But establishing the covenant, akim, is about the formal, legal, enduring relationship, the specific line of promise.
Exactly. It's the structure through which God's ultimate redemptive plan will unfold. land, people, that unique relationship with God that flows through Isaac. It's exclusive in that sense.
And God isn't vague about when this established line begins.
Not at all. He's incredibly precise. Isaac will be born.
At this time next year.
Right. Not just next year sometime, but Lamod Haza.
Lamod Haza, meaning?
At the appointed season, or at this exact point in time, it points to a fixed, almost calendrical moment in God's plan. He's working on a very specific schedule.
Okay, so summing up that part, Ishmael gets a massive, genuine blessing rooted in creation language, but the formal covenant establishment, Agime Beriti, is exclusively for Isaac, and it's set for a precise divine appointment, Lamo Hasid.
You got it. Blessing for both, but covenant establishment only for Isaac on God's timetable.
Which is fascinating, because God sets this very precise future date for Isaac's arrival.
Yeah.
But then the command he gives Abraham requires immediate action. Here's where it gets really interesting. Abraham's response.
Yes, the focus shifts dramatically from God's words to Abraham's actions. And the command is, well, it's intense. Circumcision.
Not a minor thing. Painful, risky, especially back then. And for Abraham himself, how old was he again?
99 years old.
99. Undergoing this procedure.
It's a huge physical ordeal, and culturally, it's a massive statement. It visibly marks his entire household as distinct, set apart.
And it wasn't just him, was it? The command included everyone.
Every single male, verse 23 lists them. Abraham takes Ishmael, all those born in his house, all those bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and circumcised the flesh of their foreskin.
When? Did he take some time to think about it, plan it out?
No, that's the kicker. The text says he did it by Yom Hahu.
By Yom Hahu, on that very day.
Exactly, on that selfsame day. The Hebrew stresses the absolute lack of delay, zero hesitation.
So God sets an appointed time. Lamod Haze, for the promise related to Isaac, which requires waiting.
Patience, trust in God's timing.
But for the sign of the covenant, the command for Abraham's action, it's Bayum Hahu, instant obedience.
Instantaneous. Radical. Yeah. It implies that faith, true faith in this established covenant, demands immediate physical, maybe even painful compliance. No time for second thoughts, no negotiation.
That contrast is powerful. The waiting for God's promise versus the immediacy of mandated human action. It really underscores that obedience here isn't just mental assent.
Not at all. It's full body commitment. And the text highlights the ages involved to really drive this home. Verse 24, Abraham was 99 years old, Benchi and Watashona, when he underwent this.
Almost 100. Submitting to this physically. It's a profound statement about faith requiring everything, regardless of age or comfort. If the patriarch does this immediately at 99.
What excuse does anyone else have? And then verse 25 adds Ishmael. He was 13. Ben Shilish Ishana.
13. Also old enough to understand, to feel the pain, maybe even to question it. But he submits too.
He submits. He participates alongside his father. It shows this wasn't just Abraham's personal act. It required generational buy-in. Even though Ishmael isn't the primary inheritor of the established covenant, he participates in the sign of the covenant. That's Ot Beret.
That term, Ot Beret. Sign of the covenant. Why something so physical, so permanent, so visceral?
That seems to be the point. The sign needed to be undeniable, permanent. It marked identity, belonging. It applied across the board to every man, the text emphasizes. Status didn't matter, born in the house, bought with money. Age didn't matter, old Abraham, teenage Ishmael, presumably infants too.
All of them, Bayum Hahu, on that very day. The logistics must have been staggering.
Oh, undoubtedly. Organizing potentially hundreds of men for this immediately. But the text doesn't dwell on the how. It focuses entirely on the what and the when.
Because the theological point is the immediacy.
Exactly. The speed is the statement. If God, who operates on the precise schedule of Lamod Haza, commands by Yumahu, then immediate compliance is the only faithful response. It's the measure of Abraham's trust.
Okay, so what does this all mean? Let's try and distill this. We dove into Genesis 17:20-25 and pulled out some really powerful threads about God's actions and Abraham's response.
Yeah, I think three main things stand out. First, that beautiful confirmation of God hearing, the name Yuzmul, echoing in God's own words, Jematia. And the sheer scope of Ishmael's blessing, using that core creation language, para and rabba. God's generosity even outside the main line.
Right. Second, the absolute clarity about the exclusive nature of the covenant establishment, that strong verb akambe beriti, reserved for Isaac and tied to God's perfect timing, lamo hase.
And third, perhaps the most striking, is Abraham's response. That radical, total, immediate obedience, bayum hahu, on the very day. demonstrated physically, painfully, by a 99-year-old man and his entire household. Faith in action, instantly.
It creates this fascinating tension, doesn't it, between God's appointed time that requires waiting and God's direct command that requires instant action.
It really does. And maybe that leaves you with something to think about. We see these two kinds of time operating side by side, the patient waiting for the Lamed Hase, God's appointed season, when he will act, trusting his schedule.
And then the urgency of Bayam Hahu, the call for immediate, maybe costly, commitment right now as a sign of your trust.
So the question to mull over is, in your own journey, how do you discern which dynamic is at play? When is it a time for patient waiting, trusting that God has an appointed season for his promise? And when is it a Bayam Hahu moment, demanding immediate, full-bodied, perhaps uncomfortable obedience as the necessary response of faith today? Knowing the difference, as this text shows, seems pretty crucial.